You're listening to WYLL. I'm Chris Berube. When the radio program Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me debuted in 1998, it was seen as kind of a weird oddity in public broadcasting, this silly news quiz that stood out in an otherwise serious news organization. Well, 15 years later, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is the second most popular NPR weekend show, and it's developed a loyal following around the country. Tonight is the first ever live cinema version of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, where they will be beaming a live version of the show to movie theaters across America. And according to host Peter Sagal, who is an old theater guy, well, it's actually not that daunting for him.
Well, we've been doing that for years. That's the funny thing. Yeah. We do our show every week, as maybe some of your listeners have come up to Chicago to see. We do it every week in front of a live audience. And so this is sort of a step further in that we're going to have a set, we're going to have lights, we're going to have cameras swirling around. But, you know, I'm an old theater guy. That's my background. And I like doing things on stage in front of people. So this is not that daunting to me.
I was going to say, you are somebody who comes from a theater background. I mean, do you feel like that really informs the way that you've approached doing radio?
Yeah, I do. Among other things, keep in mind, you know, what I'm doing is I'm basically staging or leading a conversation every week on a stage with people, which is sort of, if you stand back far enough and squint, kind of like a play. You know, it's sort of an improvised conversation between people. Granted, it doesn't have much of a plot, but it's still sort of a theatrical event. And I think a lot of the thrill of it comes from being right there in the theater with us, like you are in the theater, seeing something happen in front of you. I think one of the advantages our show has over, you know, the very, very, very good competitors, if you will, in the news comedy business, people like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, they're brilliant. But what we have is a kind of improvisational feel. What you hear in the radio show is actually kind of happening in front of you. And if people come and see us in the movie theaters, they will see that thing actually happen in front of them.
I feel like it's interesting because, like, a lot of people get into radio because they want to avoid crowds and people. I guess you kind of have the opposite.
Well, yeah,
reaction.
That's weird. I'm actually, when we first started doing the show, I was sitting in a radio studio, much as I am with you now, just talking to a microphone with nobody around me except somebody staring at me through glass with a severe expression on her face. And I didn't like it because theater people are used to audiences. I want to see the people who are listening. They told me that there were people listening. I didn't believe anybody. So as soon as we started doing it in front of an audience every week, I've got a lot more comfortable. I have the opposite of stage fright. I have, like, solitude fright. Show me an audience. Let me know how they're reacting to what I'm doing, and I'm much happier.
It's interesting. I feel like theater and radio are similar in the way that there's kind of a repetition to doing it every night. Like with theater, you're going up and doing the same show every night. And with radio, you're expected to provide kind of the same experience every week. That's why people tune in.
Yes.
But it's just those, like, little crazy variations that make it exciting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people want to tune into Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and hear pretty much the same show, or at least the same people doing the same kind of thing, and we provide that. But I love it myself personally when something kind of goes off the rails, because it's kind of exciting and interesting. And we're hoping that, you know, some huge disaster befalls us on May 2nd, so it becomes a quite memorable live event.
Do you have kind of a disaster that you look back on fondly that happened when you were doing the show?
You know, people ask me that, and I don't know what it is, but the answer is really no. We've never had something go so fantastically wrong that we couldn't recover and do our show. Probably the worst thing that's ever happened to us, and I say this advisedly, knowing it's not that bad, is we made the mistake of interviewing Gene Simmons.
You're not the first public radio show to do that.
The difference, you know, Gene Simmons, for your listeners who don't know, is, of course, the guy who founded Kiss, the one with the tongue, if you will. And he had a famous interview with Terry Gross that really is in the Radio Interview Hall of Fame, because he was just as obnoxious and vicious and profane and vulgar and horrible to Terry as he was to us. The difference is that Terry broadcast the whole thing. It's like, this is the guy, this is what he said to me, this is what he said. And it was just amazing to hear somebody be that insanely rude and stupid to a beloved figure like Terry Gross, who gave as good as she got, by the way. But we couldn't believe the stupid, vicious, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, sexist things he was saying. So we basically cut the whole interview. And so, you know, our interview with Gene Simmons is like 30 seconds long. But it was pretty traumatic to go through. I will always remember the silence in our studio. We were doing this when he finally was off the line. And we were like, oh, my God. We had some panelists threaten to quit. They were so upset by him.
That's surprising to hear anti-Semitic. I've never heard that about
Gene
Simmons.
Yeah, well, considering, especially because he's Jewish.
Yeah.
I would tell you what he said, but, you know, it would probably get you in touch with the FCC.
I appreciate the restraint.
Okay.
One of the signatures of the show is basically bringing on famous people and making them do something really unusual. I think my favorite in that realm is the time you had Salman Rushdie on to talk about Pez dispensers.
That was a long time ago, but yes. We were trying to get him on recently to see if he'd learned anything about Pez dispensers, but he had to cancel at the last minute.
That's a shame. I'm sure he probably has been studying them since last time.
Well, you know, there's
him.
Kind of a serious point to that, and I say this both as somebody who has interviewed a lot of people and been interviewed in my time, that there's a tendency to both ask and answer the same questions, and it becomes a little routine for everybody. I mean, how many times can person X tell the same story or whatever? So if you ask somebody like Salman Rushdie about Pez dispensers, or if you ask, as more recently happened, Bill Clinton about the TV show My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, there'll be a wonderful moment where he'll go, no one's ever done this to me before. And we'll say, no one's ever done this to you before. And you sort of make a little bit of silly history. And everybody enjoys it, I think.
I think what's interesting, I remember that, I was about to ask you about that Bill Clinton one, because you kind of see a little bit of the person's personality that you wouldn't normally see. Like, Bill Clinton being game to talk about
exactly
obsessive
right.
My Little Pony fans is so much more telling than asking him, hey, why don't you talk about your accomplishments as president, which is something
right.
that he talks about every, you know, 15 minutes.
And I love doing that. If there's one thing I love best about my job, it may be that, which is that I get to take well-known people and show a different side of them to the public.
In terms of the tone of the show, I mean, when you came on NPR, it really did sound like nothing else that was on NPR and still does to some extent. How is the adjustment kind of bringing a silly show, a show that is, you know, that talks about the news and talks about current events, but is, you know, substantially less serious than anything else on the air. How was that transition received when you started doing it?
Well, I mean, it was a little weird, but it wasn't as difficult as you might think. For one thing, everybody at NPR, including the most serious, sonorous voices you can think of, are pretty funny, smart people. You know, Robert Siegel, for example. And they know, Scott Simon, another great example, and they know that they can't be silly on the air. That's not their jobs. It's not what people expect or really, I think, want from them. And the fact that we can, that's our job, if you will, has always gotten a lot of support from NPR, both, you know, management and other people. They're like, we're glad you're doing what you're doing. And you'd think, like, people would be like, why are you hurting our brand? And over the years, you know, we're an odd little beast. We live in Chicago and work in Chicago away from the other NPR, you know, people in Washington, New York, and L.A. And we're sort of NPR, but not at NPR, and I think that helps us. I think people enjoy us because we're like, you know, we're like the really amusing cousin who comes every now and then to have dinner with you and your family on holidays, and everybody loves to see him because he's so funny and weird, and he always has great stories to tell. But secretly, everybody is glad they don't live with him.
Yeah,
that's us. We're the weird, adorable cousin who is always fun to see.
I wonder. This is kind of a serious question because NPR does have kind of a playful spirit on a lot of the shows, and sometimes, especially because your show does deal with the news, you kind of have to bump up against a national mood that really doesn't want to laugh. Like, I mean, particularly last week after everything that happened in Boston.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you handle that tonally? Like, how do you approach it when something has happened?
Tricky. It's really tricky, and you'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't be, how much sometimes we talk about this. It just so happens that last week happened during a scheduled week off. And so with some relief, we realized we wouldn't have to deal with it. Although we do talk about the Boston bombing on this week's show. You know, our general rule is if it's in the news, we'll try to talk about it. We'll try to be careful not to make fun of people who were injured, damaged in any way, physically or otherwise, through no fault of their own, you know? And if we can do that, if we can find the humor in a situation that's tragic, I think we do a favor if we do it well, because there's almost always something goofy or funny about any situation. So, for example, in this situation in Boston, you know, we talked about the fact that, you know, America, you know, found out there were Chechen bombers, apparently, or bombers from Chechnya, and they were like, everybody confused them with Czechoslovakia and, excuse me, the Czech Republic, and the Czech embassy had to put out a statement saying, no, we're different. And that we thought was funny. But stuff like that. And I think if we can do that, you know, our listeners get enjoy it in particular because they get a break.
I feel like sometimes when I'm listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I hear a joke that just seems pretty, like there's one joke that'll slide in every once in a while that just seems really out in left field,
yeah,
or that seems just kind of, I'm kind of like, wow, how did this slip through? And I wonder to some extent, like, do you write all the jokes or do you have other people doing that? And how often do you feel like that happens, that a joke kind of slips through that's maybe a little more crazy than what you expected?
Well, I mean, I love it when that happens. I work with very talented and very funny people, and we all write the show together. Their names are Michael Danforth, Ian Chillog, Eva Waltover, and Emily Acton. And together we come up with these jokes. And what we do is we sit around and we try to make each other laugh. And if we make each other laugh, if something, I mean, there have been so many moments when we have absolutely been weeping with laughter at our meetings. And somebody says, can we say that on air? And sometimes the answer is no, because you wouldn't believe how far beyond the line of decency we go in private. But sometimes we look around the table and say, why not? And we try one of those jokes. And one of the nice things about having a live audience is they are a really good measure of how far we're going. If they laugh, it makes it okay. Sometimes if they boo, it makes it okay, because to the listener at home, we've been punished, right? So it's like, oh, yeah, they deserve that, the listener says. I don't have to write in. And sometimes they just let us know, like, oh, that wasn't funny. And so then we just cut it from the broadcast. If people who come to see our Cinecast will probably see that in action. They will probably see us go too far. It almost always happens.
They'll probably be in a room where you're going to be hearing that reaction basically all the time.
There's the old statement, you know, the old saw that if you're not offending somebody, you're not doing it right. I don't know how true that is, but I think if you don't at least once in your show go too far, then you're not trying hard enough to go far enough.
Can you remember one joke that kind of came up to the line in a recent broadcast that went well, or that?
Well, we did have a long discussion of douches on our show that I don't remember the context, but we said douche about 10 times. I will tell you my favorite joke, I think, that I've told in the last 5 years, and I didn't write it. It was from Ian Chillog, one of our producers, but it made me so happy. We were talking about Tiger Woods' return to golf, you know, whatever period of time it was after his scandal.
Right.
And the line was, Tiger, he's trying to get back in the golf course after everything, but it didn't go well. It's hard for him to break his habits. He was seen hitting on a ball cleaner. So, he said, what do you do? Oh, really?
Oh, man.
I love that joke, because the dirty part is all in your mind. You know, it's that made me so happy. And that's the stuff I love to do, that's completely tasteless, but subtly so.
It's something where basically the second half of the joke is completely implied.
Exactly. And I love that. And I love we can get away with that, you know. And because, you know, we kind of have to. I mean, there's an old, I think it was Billy Wilder who said this, that, you know, there's nothing less sexy to show than sex, that it's much more interesting in film to imply things. I mean, like, if you see, and I think that's true, you know, to see one of his movies about, you know, like a sexual relationship, like even Sunset Boulevard, which is weird, is so much more thrilling than to see a modern movie where they just take off their clothes. And similarly, you know, the translation of that to us is it's much more fun and elegant to hint at unacceptable stuff, to go right up to the line and sort of point over the line where we think we might go, than it is to just say dirty words, or, you know. And so I take some pride in that.
Yeah, I feel like Paula Poundstone's kind of the master of that,
too.
She's really good.
She's really good at implying something unacceptable, but in an acceptable way.
So what can people expect at the cinema event?
Well, it's going to be a great show. I mean, we have, first of all, some usual elements, myself and Carl Castle, plus our panelists Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Mo Rocca, three of people's favorites. But we also have a musical guest for the first time, the amazingly great funk singer Sharon Jones and her band, the Dap Kings. They're awesome. And we're going to have our special guest, Steve Martin. He's a banjo player of some repute. You might have heard of him. And we're also going to have a set for the first time, and we're going to have a film to show, and we're going to have some other visual elements that we normally don't have. But it's going to be, you know, wait, in your face. If you've ever, like, been listening to it at home and thinking, I would love to see the sweat beating on Peter Sagal's bald head, now will be the time.
Peter Sagal, I know I have to let you go, but this has been a total pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you, too.
That's Peter Sagal, the host of Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR show that airs every weekend here on WYLL. And you can see their live cinema event tonight at the Savoy 16 and at movie theaters across Illinois and these United States. You're listening to WYLL.